on Ayin Vav Mem Aleph 76A, and I'm going to share the screen with the Gemara momentarily here. In case anybody was wondering, we are not having a Siyum during the 9 days. Even if I were to determine that we were on pace to finish during the 9 days, I would deliberately slow down to avoid that scenario for two reasons. One, to avoid the halachic question of the validity of a Siyum made by Zoom. Number two, because I'm not really a fan of 9 days Siyumim. I'm a much bigger fan of Siyumim that follow the 9 days, so that you really demonstrate that you're making the Siyum out of love of learning and not just a desire to eat flesh. So that plus, actually, come to think of it, I wouldn't even qualify for the Siyum, so why would I want to do it during the 9 days? I have joined in on page Tezvav or so. We were about 15 daf in before I joined, so there's really no percentage in doing that. But in any case, we have a lot more material to go before we reach the point of making a Siyum. So we had seen the Gemara here at the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, at the bottom of 76a, which had brought a brisa that talked about what one has to do to kasher different implements. We talked about koshering and then toveling, whether that's a required order. And then we had a bit of a problem. Hang on one second, I'd have to close the door. Okay. It's the joys of doing this in a basement. Okay, so the Gemara presented us with, hang on, why am I not in the right place? Hold on. No, not where I want to be here. What did I do? Here we are. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, our problem that we're up to is the issue of the shvud, is the issue of the spit. So we are four lines down on Ayin Vav Amud Aleph. Thank you, Clive. Rami le Rav Amram le Rav Sheshes. Rav Amram asks Rav Sheshes a question. Tnan hashvudin v'haaskala melabnon ba'ur. I have a Mishnah which said, it was our Mishnah, which said that a spit is koshered by whitening it in fire. We're going to talk about the definition of whitening in a little bit in the Gemara. But right now we just understand that libun is a requirement. You have to make it white hot is what it sounds like. And his problem is, the problem that he has is, on the other hand, we have the addition in parentheses Vatanya, that it's a brisa, but it should be Vatnan, it's a Mishnah. Gabi Kachim, when it comes to karbanos, Hashfud v'haaskala mag'ilon v'chamin, that a spit is koshered simply with Hagala, by immersion in boiling hot water. And we explained at the end of the last shiur that what we're talking about with this Hagala is the desire to avoid a situation in which carbon that is absorbed in the spit becomes nosar, becomes leftovers, if it sits beyond the period when you're allowed to eat the carbon. And then if you cook with it again, that vessel will, the spit will exude nosar into your food, and the food is now treif. So to avoid that, you kosher it, but all you need is hagala. So the question that we're addressing is, our Mishnah says a spit needs libun. This other source says, a spit does not need libun, all it needs is hagala, which is certainly a lesser form of koshering. So those who have the source sheet will see that I tried to outline for you the five plus different answers that the Gemara is going to go through here to try to explain it. The Gemara is going to give us a whole series of answers. Our first stop is Rav Sheshes, and we talked about him, I think, at the end last time a little bit, and then we're going to move on from Rav Sheshes to a whole bunch of other answers. But Rav Sheshes takes first shot at answering Rav Amram. Does everyone follow the question before we go further with the answer? Does everyone follow the problem? Fairly straightforward? Okay. So going back into the Gemara, sharing the screen again. The answer given by Rav Sheshes is Amar Lei Amram Bari. He says, "My son Amram, Ma'in," which is an expression of affection. He's not literally his son. Ma'inyan Kadshim Eitzel Giyulei Ovdei Kochavim. Why are you linking Kadshim Karbanos with Treif that was absorbed in the case of vessels that had been used by a non-Jew? You purchased the vessel, and you needed to kosher it. Hacha het terabala, hasam isurabala. The difference is that when you're dealing with treif, when you're dealing with a vessel you bought from a non-Jew and it's absorbed the food cooked in it by the non-Jew, so it has absorbed something prohibited, it needs a high level of kashering. Whereas with the carbon, it absorbed from a carbon. The carbon was permitted at the time that the absorption took place. This is what we call hetera bala, and therefore a lower level of kashering is needed. That's the answer that Rav Sheshes gives to Rav Amram. So I wanted to take a minute in order to go a little bit further into this concept of hetera bala and the idea that we should require a different level of kashering for this. Why should that be true? So I'm going to pause the share on this and then share with you the source sheet where I gave you some material there. So that's what I'm going to share now. Okay, there's the table in fine color. And there's Rav Sheshes as the first answer. The absorbed material was permitted then at the time of the absorption, therefore we are more lenient. So what exactly is this idea? Why should I be more lenient just because it absorbed something permissible? Why does that matter? The bottom line is, I need to get that permissible material out. Just like getting prohibited material out requires libun, so too getting permitted material out should require libun. Why is there any distinction? So here I show you on the sheet the position of Ramban on our Gemara. He says, Kishabala ha'isur adayin lo hayashmo alav, shaloya nikra noser. When it absorbed the prohibited material, it wasn't yet noser, it wasn't leftovers, it was karbon. Only after absorption did it get the title of this nosar, leftovers. So what? What I added in, but what I bolded here, ve'ein iser nosar chal al balua, ela b'mashahu roi liflot al yidei hagala, shibliya gedola sheba no same time. He says, I'll tell you why. Whatever is absorbed in the walls of this vessel is minimal. Only if you have a significant quantity absorbed will that actually gain the title of nosar. If all you have absorbed is a minimal amount, there's nothing significant to be removed. What the Ramban is saying here, and I think it requires it to be stated explicitly, is something fascinating. We have different ways to kosher something. You can just rinse the surface for something that was just used with cold. We have hagala, where you boil it up. And then we have libun, in which you make the thing white hot. I might have thought that the difference between these kinds of koshering is that they refer to different types of absorption in it. Ramban says no. What these different types of kashering refer to are different degrees of absorption. A lot of material, if it's coarse, if there's a lot of stuff, so then use rinsing and that'll get the extra amounts out because it's already on the surface. If there's stuff that's absorbed, large amounts have been absorbed, then Hagala will get that out. Libun will get out even finer absorption. Think of sandpaper. as the example. You have different degrees of sandpaper. For something that's really rough, that's really coarse, so coarse sandpaper will get rid of it. However, coarse sandpaper is not going to get rid of finer things. For that, you need a finer grain of sandpaper in order to get it out. So that's what's going on here, says Ramban. He says, Haggalah gets out large amounts that are absorbed in the walls. Libun is needed if you need to get out an even finer amount that's been absorbed in the walls. So he says, Haggalah is all that's needed here. I don't need to go to the Libun level, because if what was absorbed in the walls was permitted at the time of absorption, it only becomes prohibited if there's a large amount of it, such that Haggalah would remove it. Whereas, that's applicable for the carbon. It's only if you have a large amount that's in there. And that's what's removed when you kosher it via Haggalah. As opposed to treif was already usher when it went in. In which case, any minimal amount is prohibited. And therefore, I need to bring in the blowtorch in order to get out that minimal amount that's in the walls. I see that there's a chat message. Let me just see. This is probably Chuck, if I had to guess. And? Is it? It's not showing up.
What's sheer for noiser?
No, it's not. It's Mori writing. Grit. Yes, the grit of the sandpaper. Thank you. Sorry, what was the question, Rabbi Grossman?
What is the shear for noiser?
Kazayas. The shear isn't what we're talking about here. The shear, the minimum amount for you to consume in order to be liable, is not their point. What their point is that there's a difference between if I have a piece of carbon sitting on my table and the time expires, that amount, whether it's small, whether it's large, doesn't make a difference. That becomes noser automatically. However, if that piece of carbon is not sitting on the table, but rather it's absorbed in the walls of the kli, then only if it is large is it going to gain the title of noser. If it's not large, it doesn't become noser in the first place. The absorption in the walls of something is insignificant unless there is a large amount of it. And if there's a large amount of it, Haggalah is good enough to degrade it such that it'll become a small amount. Yes, Alan?
By definition, if we didn't hold that way, would it be a problem that technically almost every korban would become noser, because some part of it, some little part, is going to get absorbed in the spit, so that you have to whiten the spit each time you used it otherwise?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. In other words, the Gemara says, I don't know why we don't follow Alan's suggestion. I don't know why we're not doing Libun. And the answer is, you don't need to do Libun. Why? Because whatever's absorbed in it, If it's large enough to come out by Haggalah, your Haggalah will take care of it. And if it's smaller, it doesn't become noser. This isn't just a principle for noser. This is a principle for all prohibited materials. Anytime something is absorbed, when it is permitted, it won't become prohibited unless there is a large amount of it. The Encyclopedia Talmudit offers you an interesting connection here. If I take fish and I cook fish, plain kosher fish, pariv and all that, and I cook it in a clean meat pot, it's a fleshic pot, it's been used for meat, but it's clean right now, am I allowed to eat that fish with dairy? Yes, Rabbi Grossman says, absolutely. Why is that? Why don't I say that there was meat in the wall of the pot, it went into the fish, and now I'm eating milk and meat when I eat the fish with the dairy? Why is this okay? You're right, but why?
It's a clean pot, so nothing is, so what's going to come out of the walls of the pot?
You know what? You know what, because you learned your idea.
Yeah, so
it's not Barnat. right? No sane Tom bar no sane Tom is not bar not. And what it means is that if all you're getting is that at some point meat was cooked in the pot and some element of meat, of that meat, was absorbed in the wall, it was no sane Tom, it gave taste into the wall, and of what was in the wall, some minimal amount entered into the fish, that's no sane Tom bar no sane Tom. It's a taste from the meat that went into the wall, and a taste from that, some smaller percentage, that actually made it into the fish, and it was of inherently permitted material. The meat that was in the wall was inherently fine. So therefore, it's not significant enough to create a meat-milk mixture when I go eat that fish with dairy. It's too insignificant. It doesn't matter, is what we're saying. Not bar not, a permitted material, is insignificant. Whatever was in the meat that you cooked in the pot, percentage of that got into the wall, percentage of what was in the wall got into the fish, that's not going to do anything when I eat the fish with dairy. Therefore, I'm allowed to eat the fish with dairy. This is completely separate from discussions about not having fish and meat together. That's a whole other parsha. But
that's irrespective of whether it's binyam or ein binyam.
Correct. That has nothing to do with waiting 24 hours. The only requirement is that the pot should be clean. That's the there's nothing on the surface. So Ramban says, whatever piece of the carbon got absorbed in the wall, if it's large, Hagala will reduce it, will degrade it. And if it's small, it doesn't become noser in the first place. It's too small to be halachically significant. I'll give you another example of this. The Prima Gadim points out, we have a rule in general that says that if I have a if I have treif that gets mixed, actually not treif, that won't work for this example. I'm trying to think of a good example to use for that. All right, I'll use a non-kosher example first. If I had a sherry cask, okay, I had a barrel that was used to hold non-kosher sherry, and then after that, I want to use it to age my whiskey. So the sherry was no good. The sherry was non-kosher. Therefore, that taste from the sherry, when it gets into the whiskey, trafes up the whiskey. Ah, but you'll tell me it's less than 1/60th of the volume of the whiskey. Whatever there is from the sherry should be batel, should be canceled out in the whiskey. Now, whether it's 1/60th or 1/6th, what the ratio is we're looking for doesn't matter for our purposes. The reason why you can't do that, or the argument against doing that, is because it's avidi l'taima. You specifically are using those casks because you want the taste of the whiskey to be influenced by the taste of the sherry. That's not necessarily true. There are those who argue you're not looking for the taste, you're looking for the texture, you're looking for the fragrance. All of you are 20 times more expert, in why you're putting, the whiskey in the cask, over me. I don't understand why at all. But the idea is, we have a principle that says that which is avidi l'taima, if it's introduced for the sake of affecting the taste, it's not batel. It can't be canceled in the mixture. If you did it in order to influence the taste, it can't be batel. However, says the Prima Gadim, not if hetera bala. If what you're talking about was absorbed initially in a permitted state, then once again, it can be batel. It can be canceled out. So what we're saying here, again, is we're more lenient when it comes to kashering the spit because the carbon was absorbed in the spit at a time when the carbon was permitted. But treif was absorbed in the spit, then we're going to require libun. I want to add a note on this. I want to go two more steps with this just because I think it's good information to have. I brought you that Encyclopedia Talmudit on your sheet, by the way. It's source B. But I'm going to jump to source Gimel here. Source Gimel talks about kashering a baking dish from dairy to meat on Yom Tov. Okay? I'm koshering a baking dish to go from dairy to meat on Yom Tov. He says, Mutter lelabein b'yom tov kli barzel sh'afu bo paladun shel gvina. He says, you will be allowed to do libun on Yom Tov on an iron dish that you use to bake a paladun of cheese. Paladun is some kind of baked thing. It's some kind of kugelish thing. You're allowed to do that. And once you've done that, you'd be allowed to bake a kugel of meat in that same dish. His only concern is you have to immediately expose it to the food. I'll go back to sharing in a second. I just have to auto-mute because there's some background noise. I'll share that again. There we go. There's a separate concern that it has to be obvious that you're doing this libun process for the sake of cooking for Yom Tov, so that everybody understands it's not prep for after Yom Tov. But what he says is, if your iron baking dish absorbed the dairy on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do the libun to use it now for meat after that. Aval imu balua minavela, but if it absorbed treif, Aser lelabno, you would not be allowed to do libun. So I'm allowed to kosher my baking dish from dairy to meat on Yom Tov using libun. Why am I allowed to do that? Why am I allowed to undergo this process? Why isn't it called fixing the utensil? So the Levush explains, you're not allowed to fix utensils on Yom Tov, that's true, but this isn't called fixing it, because hetera bala, it absorbed in a permitted way, meaning the dairy that it originally absorbed was 100% permitted. Therefore, he says, you're allowed to do this on Yom Tov. You're not really called fixing the kli, because what it absorbed was this permitted material. One last note on this hetera bala, and we'll continue in the Gemara, is the Mishnah Berurah, which I brought you in Source Dalet. And what the Mishnah Berurah says is, what he does is he asks a question. Let me ask you the question first before we do this on the sheet. What would you say is the status of a vessel that absorbs chametz on Purim? Is that vessel hetera bala or isura bala? Did it absorb permitted material or prohibited material? It absorbed chametz on Purim. Alan says, thumbs up, meaning hetera bala. Okay? Chuck says
it's hetera
bala. So
yeah, it only becomes chametz on Pesach.
Well, it became chametz before Pesach. It becomes aser.
Yeah, but then it reverts back to permitted after Pesach.
So that is a very interesting question. The Mishnah Berurah asks this question, and he says it's a machlokas. Apparently here we had universal acclaim that it's a hetera bala. Mishnah Berurah is not so sure. He says in Source Dalet, v'nechleku aposkim, he says, the halachic authorities debate, le'inyan chametz habalua b'kli, regarding chametz that's absorbed in a vessel, yesh omrim tezeg gankein mikri hetera bala. Some people, like Alan, like Jack, they say it absorbed permitted material, shebe'emza hashana, kishenivla hachametz shalomu yasa b'shvud, haya heter, during the year, when chametz got absorbed in the spit, it was permitted material. V'alkein sagi behagala, and therefore before Pesach, all I have to do is hagala. Ula didhu, and according to that view, kol kelim shetashmishin ayidei ur le'inyan Pesach dai behagala. You want to kosher your stuff for Pesach? I know nobody koshers anything for Pesach. Now they just get a second item. Nonetheless, if you wanted to kosher your baking dish for Pesach, hagala is all you need. You want to kosher your spit for Pesach? Hagala is all you need. But then, v'yesh omrim, some say, we're on the top of the second side, davka nosar, shebe'ez hablia lo haya shem nosar ala basar klal. He says it's only nosar that's called hetera bala, because at the time it was absorbed, it wasn't nosar, it was just karbon. Lachei nikra davar zeh b'shem hetera bala. Therefore it's called absorption of permitted material. This is what I said to Jack. At the time that the chametz was absorbed, it was chametz. And now on Pesach, it's also called chametz. It's just that retroactively we say, now chametz is usur. So it was usur back then. Lo mikri b'shem hetera bala, then it's not called hetera bala. The chametz bala besocho, it absorbed chametz, v'gam achshavu chametz, and it's chametz now, and therefore it's called isura bala. And he writes, sorry, ulezeh hiskimu rov haposkim v'alkein pasak hamachaber kavasayu. He says, that's what most authorities agree. Chametz is called isura bala, and the machaber follows that that view. He does note, he adds a note, and he says, however, in a case where there are other arguments to permit, you could add the hetera bala idea to support the idea of leniency. But he says, no, chametz is technically isura bala. So to go back to our...
What's the nafka mean of that? Does that mean that if you, let's say, you had a spit that absorbs chametz, you would have to do liban?
You have to do liban.
That wouldn't be enough. Hagala wouldn't be enough.
Correct. Exactly.
Right. What if it's something like a pot, though, that normally you would kosher?
Pot is always hagala. Pot is always hagala. To sum up what we did with this, Rav Sheshes' answer to Rav Amram is to say, we are more lenient when it comes to karbanos. All that's needed for the spit is hagala, because what it absorbed was permitted material. And what we mean by that, as Ramban explains, and Encyclopedia Talmudid explains as well, is that if it absorbed a lot, then it indeed can become prohibited. It can gain the title of noser, but hagala will get out large-scale absorption. Liban is the finer grit sandpaper that's going to get out that's going to get out the finer absorptions, and we're not concerned for the finer absorptions here. And we showed a few different applications of this, including how you kosher chametz things for Pesach. But let's go back to our Gemara now. So, what is the answer to this? Is that really sufficient? Rabba says that's not sufficient. Back in the Gemara where you see my arrow is, I'm going to take it up to the top of the page so you'll be able to see it more clearly. The word Amar is the last word on the line. Amar, it says in our editions Rava, but it means Rabba. I'll tell you how we know that shortly. Rabba says, Sof sof ki kapalit isura kapalit. Rabba says that's no good. He says, yes, I understand when it was absorbed in there, it was mutter material, it was permitted material. However, it becomes usur, it becomes no sir. He doesn't like our whole explanation of hetera bala. He rejects the whole thing. So he gives you a different answer. Ela amar Rava, rather Rava, or really Rava, says, my hagala nami shtifa umarika. He says, I'll tell you what. What's going on here is that when it says in Zvachim that you have to do Hagala, it doesn't mean you don't do Libun. You do Libun. You better do Libun. But because you're dealing with Karbanos, there's an added requirement. There's a separate requirement of Umorak Vishutaf Bamayim. Meaning, there is a pasuk, I brought it on your source sheet, which we are told that when you cook with a karban, afterwards, you have to wash out the vessel with water. And he's saying, that's Hagala. If you take a look, I just gave it to you in the margin in Rashi. Ela Amar Rava, should be Rava. Hai Hagala Diksani Hasam. When it said Hagala in the Gemara in Zvachim, Marika Ushtifa, it's talking about rinsing it out. Klomar. La'olam liflota yisir vadai libun boi. You definitely need libun to get rid of the prohibited material. Kishar b'liyas yisir. Just like any time prohibited material is absorbed. Ela mitzvas melech hibakajim. But God gave you a separate instruction when you're dealing with karbanos. It's a unique mitzvah that you have to also do hagala umorak v'shutaf b'mayim. It shall be emptied out, it shall have everything removed from it with water. I'm not going through the rest of the Rashi right now. The principle that Rava states is, this is God's decree for vessels that are used to cook korbanos. They need libun, and they also need hagalah, but it's not a replacement. Are we clear on that? Everyone follows? That's his answer. To which Abaye says, I am not impressed. Amar le Abaye. Abaye says, I have a problem with your answer. It's the third line that's on your screen. Midami Marika Ushtifa Bitsa Midami. Sorry, he says, Midami, how can you compare the two? How could you say Morak Vishutaf Bamayim refers to Hagala? Marika Ushtifa Bitsone. And he says, by definition, Marika Ushtifa just means rinsing. It's cold water. Hagala Bechamin. Hagala, by definition, is with hot water. He says that pasuk isn't talking about Hagala. And now I go back for a moment just to explain how we knew it was Rava instead of Rava. Does anybody know how you know that it's Rava and not Rava? Who is he arguing with? Good. Because Abaye is the one who responds to him. In terms of order of seniority among the Amoraim, Rava is the Rebbe of Abaye. And Abaye is the Rebbe of Rava. And it's true, Rava becomes Abaye's sparring partner, right? And he's good at it. Nonetheless, you will not see Rava say something and then Abaye ask, but what about? Anytime you see Abaye challenging Rava, it's not Rava, it's Rava. So that's how you know here that it was Rava and not Rava before. Also, Rava is going to show up again shortly in the Gemara. But in any case, Abaye says Abaye says, I don't know what you're talking about. You can't give me the answer that regarding Karbanos, they were talking about Hagala as an extra step to fulfill the pasuk of Umorak Vishutaf Bamayim. That doesn't work. That's just not an answer to the problem. Umorak Vishutaf Bamayim means you're supposed to rinse it. And that's all it means. The Meiri actually has a way to justify Rabba, but I'm not going to go into it right now. I don't want to confuse things too much. So instead we're going to go further in the Gemara. But that is Abaye's rejection. So then what's Abaye's answer? If you're following with the source sheets, we're now up to answer number 3. And what Abaye says is Ella Amar Abaye. Abaye says Yagid Olav Re'o. Yagid Olav Re'o is a pasuk in Iyov. In context in Iyov, most commentators believe that the term Re'o means his thunder. It's talking about God, this pasuk. It's a speech, it's part of a speech about divine power. And what it's saying is, his thunder, God's thunder, speaks about him. So in other words, you know how mighty God is when you hear the thunderclap. That's the pasuk in context, according to many commentators. But that's not what Abaye does with it. Abaye pulls it out of context and says the word rea doesn't have to mean ram, thunder. The word rea, like v'hafta l'reacha kamocha, means your peer, your fellow. Yagid alav reo means the other pasuk teaches you about this one, and this one teaches you about that pasuk. What in the world do you mean? He's not really talking about pasukim. He's talking about the two sources, the one here that said libun, and the one there that said hagala. And look what Abaye says. Tana hacha libun, v'hu hadin l'hagala. Tana hasam hagala, v'hu hadin l'libun. Abaye's answer, this is a really remarkable answer. Abaye's answer is, you're both right. You're both correct. Our Gemara here said, you do Libun. The Gemara in Zvachim said, you do Hagalah. And the answer is, you do both. That's the answer. You do Libun and Hagalah, whether it's for a carbon or whether it's for treif. That's his answer. Why does that not hold water? Why does that not hold water, so to speak? Oh, come on. If you wanted to write any sort of halachic or quasi-halachic work, right? in which you are presenting instructions for people. Here's what you do if your vessel absorbed treif. Would you really have, like, one piece over here in which it says, okay, here's what you do. Step one, do X. And then, somewhere else, have the same discussion and say, here's what you do. Step one, do Y. And in neither case, do you say, by the way, there are two steps? If the goal of the Gemara was to mislead you about how to kosher things, that's exactly what you would do. That's a great way to mislead people. Right? I mean, that's just perfect. Right? Here you go. Here are your instructions. You want to become an electrician. So you want to take care of switching up the wall socket. So in one place in the manual, you say, make sure that you turn off the breaker. But in the other place in the manual, you say, start pulling the thing out of the wall. And then you're surprised why the electricians are having trouble. But that's what the Gemara did according to Abaye. I expected, Abaye says, I didn't understand why they had a problem. I thought they were going to read the entire manual and then figure out that I meant to do both things. You don't do that. So Rava says, Abaye, what did you think you were doing? That can't be. Amar Le Rava. Rava says to Abaye, Ihachi, if that's true, Lisninhu lekulu bechada, velisni chada beidach acharisi velema yagid alav reyo. He says, if that's what you wanted to do, then what you should have done was you should have mentioned both actions in one place. And then I would have been able to deduce for the other. But not to say one here and one there. This is, by the way, classic Rava. This happens a lot in the Gemara with Abaye versus Rava, where Abaye will give you an answer for something, and Rava will say, like, well, that's not what the text says. It's just not what it says. It's not a logical argument he's having. It's just like, your answer doesn't work. So Rava says, I can't accept that idea. And he gives us another approach. Rava says, I'll tell you why Kachim only need Haggalah. He says, the reason is, I'll say it outside and then you'll see it in the text, they actually boil up and cook in the carbon vessel on a daily basis. And therefore, the absorption in the walls never ends up becoming noser. Ela Amar Rava. Rava says, I'll tell you. Kachim hainu tamayu kedir Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Baravua. The reason regarding Karbanos is like what Rav Nachman said, quoting Rabba Baravua. The Amar, he said, Kol yom v'yom nase gi'ul l'chaveiro. Each day you cook in it, it's like you're doing a Haggalah and pulling it out. And therefore there's no need to ever have to do, Libun. Every day the thing is renewed. To which the Gemara says, well, not so fast. That only works if you have a carbon that isn't already nosar by then. But let me break down the way the rules work. If you bring a carbon shlamim, then this works. A carbon shlamim, you have 2 days to eat. The day that you cook it, then you bring the carbon and cook it, and the next day. However, a carbon chatas has to be eaten on the day when it's brought. By the next day, it's already no sir. So the Gemara says, Tenoch shlamim, that's fine for shlamim. Dekeman de l'shne yamim mis'achle, since it's eaten for 2 days. Mikami didn't have a no sir. Before it can become no sir, kahavi gi'ul. It is already being recooked and removed, because you're cooking with this thing every day. Elochatas, but if it's a carbon chatas in there, Kevin de Leon Valaila Misachla, since you can only eat it that day and the following night, Kimavasha Baha Idna Chatas Havi Nosar. When you cook a chatas in it, it is now leftovers. Kihadar Mavasha Lalamachar Oshlam. Sorry. Havi Nosar Kihadar Mavasha Balamachar. It's going to be Nosar the next day. He says it's not going to work because it's going to be no sir already on the following day. This isn't going to work. O shlamim o chatas kapalis nos kapalit no sir dechatas. The chazdei, I should say. Yeah, sorry. Read it again. He says, Ki hadir mevasher balamachar o shlamim ochatas. When you cook a shlamim or a chatas in it the next day, kapalit noser dechatas deha inna bechatas o shlamim delamachar. It's going to exude the leftovers of today's chatas in tomorrow's chatas or shlamim. Does everyone follow the problem? You told me that the reason why only hagala is needed the next day is because you're actually cooking it up on a daily basis, and therefore it never becomes nosar. But he says that's not going to work, because if I cook the chatas today, it becomes nosar by the end of today. When you cook tomorrow, it's too late. So the answer is, Amri lo, no. Lo tzricha deki mevashel ba chatas ha'idna, hader mevashel ba ha'idna shlamim. De chatas de lamachar, shlamim de esmo ba'hadi ha'dadi kashalim zimnayu, v'hader mevashel shlamim de lamachar. He says, no, I'll tell you how we solve the problem. The way we do it is, you always cook a shlamim after a chatas on the same day. And therefore we'll always have an extra day to survive before it becomes nosar. So even if it gets cooked with a chatas the next day, that's okay, because that will be taken care of with the shlamim that day. It is always going to be okay. And I'm rushing a little bit just to finish this this answer that he gives. But does everyone follow what he's suggesting? If you look at your sheet, you can see that I put it there as the fourth answer. He's telling you the absorbed material is recooked on a daily basis, and therefore it never becomes nosar. My chatas that I cook today, I cook a shlamim afterwards in the same vessel, and it's going to get eaten, and therefore it's going to be okay, and there is no-sar issue. That's the...
Wouldn't there be the problem of the... Let's say in the same pot or whatever, same utensil, you made a chatas and a shlamim.
Yeah.
So therefore, I understand you have the 2 days for the shlamim, but you only have 1 day for the chatas, so therefore... wouldn't there still be notes from the chatas every day?
Right. Correct. So I think the way you have to work this is, number one, you're going to eat that shlamim that day. You can't wait with that shlamim. It's going to have to be eaten that day. And the you are restarting the cycle for it with that shlamim, and it gains the identity of the shlamim when it gets reabsorbed. I think that's what you have to say.
But wouldn't you have to clean the pot or whatever every day to get rid of the nosar that's in the pot?
So what we're saying is that you won't need to, because it gains the shlamim's clock. That's
the
idea.
On the shlamim?
Yeah. It takes on that identity.
How does that work?
So it's an interesting question, but you don't need to ask it, because you have a bigger problem. Rava's got a bigger problem coming, right?
Okay.
What's the bigger problem? Before you see it in the Gemara, what's the bigger problem here?
First of all, why do we assume that there's always a shlamim after chatas?
Because they know. He's saying it's a matter of policy. That's what they did. That's what he's telling you.
There's so many other karbanos, though, that, you have oil of yared, you have Moshe Talui, you have where is that assumption coming from?
Where is the assumption coming from that that's going to be true? It's simply so. I mean, he's making a policy statement. But you have a bigger problem. I don't understand. Look at the Gemara. He says, where now the top line, or next to the second line that's on your page. Ihachi, Aleph Hey, Ihachi, if that's true, Hagala Nami Loli Boy, then why are you ever doing Hagala? There's no sir. What's the big deal? If I am cooking in this pot on a daily basis, and I always make sure to end with a shlamim, and therefore any chatas that's absorbed gains the shlamim's identity, and it has an extra day, there's no treif. There's no nosar. What hagal are you doing at all? So he waves it off. He says, Kasha. Yeah, that's a problem. Okay, fine. Kasha generally means it's an answer that I could solve somehow, but I'm not going to bother right now. But the Gemara is not even going to proceed with it. The Gemara is going to switch instead to Rav Papa, who's going to offer us a different approach altogether. But to sum up what we've said, We ask the we have the problem. Two different sources. Regarding treif, we say libun. Regarding kachim, karbanos, we say hagala. Rav Sheshe says we're more lenient for the karban because it was absorbed as permitted material. Rabba says, I don't like that idea because fundamentally it becomes noser, it becomes prohibited. So he doesn't accept that. He says we're not being lenient at all. We're requiring libun, and we're also requiring hagala as a post-kashering method, requirement of rinsing. Mitzvah's melech, it's what God wants us to do. Abaye says that doesn't make any sense. What God told you to do is a cold process, not a hagala process. So Abaye says, we actually require libun and hagala as the kashering processes. To which Rava said, then the Gemara should have told you that. If that's what the Gemara meant, that you need to do these two steps, someone should have said that. That's not what's going on. Rather, it's recooked daily. It never becomes nosar at all. To which the Gemara asks, the narrator, so to speak, there's no name attached to it, the Gemara says, well, then you didn't need to do hagala at all. So the Gemara is going to give us one more answer from Rav Papa before Rav Ashi is going to go back to the Hetera Bala idea, and that will conclude this discussion, and then we'll get to talking about how you do Libun and how you do Hagala on a practical level. So that'll be, God willing, next week. I will just note, as far as I'm concerned, I can continue with the Shir. Ben Azmanim is going to begin with Rosh Chodesh Av. I'm planning, other than August 2nd and August 9th, when I'll be traveling, I expect to continue the Shir as long as there are people who want to learn it. So, I don't even know what date I'm on now. Today is July 12th, but we're certainly fine for the 19th, and we're certainly fine for the 26th. Okay?
We may be finished, but...
Right, so you missed the beginning of the Shir. I'm...